Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And we have a very important issue to be addressed today. It has to do with Myanmar, has to do with Canada, has to do with international law. And fortunately, we have as our guest, Christopher Black, who practices international law, has represented clients at The Hague and at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and Yugoslavia. Christopher, thanks for being with us.
So good to be with you again, Phil.
I want to tell you the bare bones of a problem, and I am very glad to be talking to you because I know you're one of the lawyers who has been thinking of this same issue. I once worked as an investigator, you remember, at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda.
Right.
And when I was first there in Arusha, I asked Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the U.S., to give us kind of an assessment of what we were doing at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. And what this tribunal was all about. It was an ad hoc tribunal. And his answer was that the ICTR was war by other means.
Right.
And now something has happened here. And the making all the news, actually it's been about 10 days of silence. It made big news about 2 weeks ago. We were told by the media, the New York Times broke the big story. The Globe wrote a separate story of their own, borrowing heavily from the New York Times. The CBC covered it, and they interviewed Canada's ambassador to new ambassador to the United Nations, Bob Rae. And the story was this, that two Myanmar soldiers had given a statement. But they didn't describe it as a statement. They said that it was they had confessed to war crimes, and that they had, some of the media used the word, they are testifying. Then in the story, it developed or was revealed that they were captives or being held by something called the Arakan Army, which is one of, they describe them as an ethnic rebel army fighting the government of Myanmar. But it was earth-shaking news, according to Bob Rae, that now we had a confession from soldiers that they had committed crimes in a Rakhine state of Myanmar. Now, the next part of the story was, well, where were the soldiers? And they said that no one was quite sure, but they seem to have been gone from being in the custody of the Arakan rebel army. Someone said they appeared at the Bangladesh border. Then they were told, and now we get into the land of sources, so that somehow they crossed into Bangladesh. The Bangladeshi authorities were asked by persons unknown, media, I guess, where are they? And they said, well, again, we're not sure who said what, but the Bangladeshis allegedly said, well, they came here, and because they said something about war crimes, we informed the ICC, the International Criminal Court at The Hague, and they're not here anymore. And so the question is, well, where are they? And they say, well, apparently they are now with the International Criminal Court at The Hague. So the International Criminal Court was asked, what are you doing with them? And the ICC spokesman said, we don't have them. They're not here. It's not true.
Right.
And then lastly, and I'm sorry to torture you with all these bare details, but you're the lawyer, so I want you to explain what this is. Now, so the last point I got, saw in the media was, they said, they are now being hosted, the two individuals, Myanmar citizens, allegedly soldiers, are being hosted in the Netherlands, and the Netherlands provided them with visas and, of course, a place to stay. Now, no one has actually seen these two individuals. Mm. Now, so we're talking to Christopher Black, international lawyer, etc. And the reason I'm so glad to be talking to you, Chris, is that we're hearing a lot about international, what is it, human rights law. And we're hearing about how wonderful the International Criminal Court is. And then there's this other phenomena. I want you to clarify all this for us. The International Court of Justice. Right. And it strikes me that they don't need these two soldiers, these two individuals. They don't need a human rights lawyer. They need a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Tell me what's wrong with the, or if there is anything wrong in what you, those bare bones I gave you, I think, are completely factual. What's going on here?
Well, it smacks of the methods they used at the ICTY, the Yugoslav Tribunal and the Rwanda Tribunal. If they have snatched, somebody has captured and handed over to some third party and then transferred these people to The Hague without going through an extradition process, a formal extradition process and request by the ICC, then they've been kidnapped. I mean, if they, the Arakan army, there are two Arakan armies, as I understand it. There's the Arakan National Army, which fights for independence of that region from Myanmar, or a federated system. So they have more power in the central government. And then there's the Arakan Salvation Army, which is what the Arakan army calls a bunch of Bengali Muslim terrorists. So there's fighting between those two armies, who both fight the Myanmar government for their own interests. Mm. And it's a very complicated situation. The Myanmar government says that their actions are not war crimes. They've responded to military attacks on their posts and responded appropriately. So if these men were captured in battle by, say, the Arakan army, then they're prisoners of war, because the Arakan army has a formal command structure, has officers, it has political representatives. So it's it would have to treat them according to the Geneva Conventions. To hand them over to a third country to be tried as criminals is a violation of the Geneva Conventions. You can't do that with prisoners of war and force them to testify against their own government. Imagine if American prisoners were captured in Iraq and were forced to testify in some tribunal held by rebels in Iraq. they would be laughed at. So that's illegal. And then how did they get, if they're in the Netherlands, how did they get there? I doubt it was very, if they had been captured and they exist, I doubt very much that it was voluntary. They were probably kidnapped, taken in chains, and then handed over to the Dutch, who are quite, as we know, experienced in working for the Americans and doing everything they can to advance NATO interests. They kidnapped, helped kidnap Milosevic and other prisoners. They're involved in the MH17 inquiry against Russia, staging a show trial there against four alleged suspects, all of which is a charade. So the Dutch are very capable of cooperating with the powers that be in the Western hegemony of the Americans against a third, a country they're interested in influencing, like Myanmar. Mm. So where are they? So they're being held incommunicado, the Dutch say, or somebody says, in the Netherlands. Well, then the Netherlands government has to provide them, admit so, tell people where they are, tell their families where they are, tell the Myanmar government where they are, allow them to see representatives of the Myanmar ambassador, or the government, that is the ambassador, so they can get legal representation and defend their interests. Hmm. These men cannot be charged by the ICC. The ICC's role, the International Criminal Court, is to charge high-level military and officers and officials of governments which commit atrocities in wars. They're not aimed at charging low down. I understand these men have the rank of sergeant or something like that, allegedly. That's not what they're geared to do. So they would be witnesses. Now, if they're witnesses, they should be freed. And they should be sent back to Myanmar and restored to their command. And then they can be called. If they want to make statements, they can be called as witnesses later on if there's ever charges laid against the government of Myanmar. But the fact is, the government of Myanmar cannot be charged by the ICC because it's not a member of the ICC. The ICC has no jurisdiction over Myanmar.
Yes.
There are some, like Bob Ray and others have human rights groups, so-called Western human rights groups, like Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and Fortify Rights, which was quoted in the CBC article in the New York Times as the source.
Yes.
And they are, who are they? This is a diversion, a digression, but that Fortify Rights is funded by the National Endowment for Democracy. Its staff come from Human Rights Watch. Matthew Smith, I believe, is the executive director. He's a Human Rights Watch official. It's connected to Amnesty International. Therefore, it's connected to the Western intelligence NGOs, which mask themselves as human rights groups. Mm. And we know their role at the ICTY, the Rwanda Tribunal, and in putting out false propaganda to overthrow governments the United States doesn't like, alleging atrocities against these governments to fire up people's emotions.
Yeah. By the way, Chris, if I could just interrupt at that point, because the Fortify Rights, it's very interesting the role they play, because here you have two soldiers in custody of a rebel army of some type, and a video is made of them allegedly confessing, and the West immediately says, well, we know it's real and we know it's true because Fortify Rights told us it was.
Right.
And the guy from Fortify Rights is a young man from Harvard who happens to be being well paid, I suppose, living somewhere in Asia. But so the New York Times relies on a guy from Harvard to tell him whether or not this soldier did not. And by Fortify Rights said, we wanted to be sure that they hadn't made the statement under duress. And then they said to us, well, we know that they didn't. Well, I tell you something, Chris, I saw some of the video, and Bob Ray has never said whether he saw the video. I saw the video because the Arakan Army makes it available if you want to watch. And two men and the two individuals are sitting on a mat with an arranged backdrop. They are not terribly happy. They were sitting absolutely still, and they were answering sharply barked questions. Right. And their voices were not what I would call natural voices. They were making sharp, barked answers, very precise answers. Another detail, there were two other soldiers in the video, not identified.
Right.
But to go back to your point, Fortify Rights has told the New York Times and Globe and Mail, CBC, we certify, click, you know, stamped it. This is authentic, and their rights were not violated. Give me a break.
Right, because these are prisoners of war. Prisoners of war can't be coerced into testifying against their own governments. It's a violation of the Geneva Convention. Every schoolboy knows from watching any war movie. Soldiers captured don't have to give any more information than name, rank, and serial number.
Exactly.
Any attempt to try and question them further is illegal. So I doubt very much that these soldiers, if they gave a statement of any sort, did so willingly. And the circumstances you describe indicate they're under great duress with armed soldiers. They're captured, they're prisoners, and the Arakan Army is not known to be nice to prisoners, from what I understand. So they would be willing to say almost anything, I suppose, to save their lives. But we don't even know what they said. I don't know what language they testified in, or they gave a statement in, and do we have a translation of what they actually said and what was barked at them?
Well, thank you for mentioning. Yes, there's an additional detail that that no one comments on, that the Arakan Army is a very efficient group. They apparently were speaking whatever the language. There are many, several languages, by the way, I understand, in Myanmar. I'm as ignorant as the next Canadian about the real facts of the life in Myanmar. But the Arakan Army put English subtitles. So the to simplify it for our ambassador and for the people of, as it happens, who interviewed our ambassador, and they all rang the, twisted their fingers over how terrible the confession was. Well, as you say, this is an interrogation. A judge would have to just basically throw it out, would he not?
Right, it wouldn't be allowed in evidence because it's under duress.
Yeah. Well, they don't identify, we don't know who that sharp voice is who's asking them their questions.
No, and we did not see what happened before the video began to run.
Yeah.
How they were brought into the room, were they in chains, in handcuffs, had they been beaten, had they been told or threatened, had they been given a script, had they been told, presented the questions and answers before they got there and told, this is what you're going to say, which is often the case from my, both your and I experience at the ICTR. We know that prisoners have been coerced and held incommunicado and put heavy pressure on. It happened to John Kambanda when he was held by the Americans in Tanzania, the Prime Minister of Rwanda, without trial for 9 months in a hotel and threatened by two Canadian police officers to say certain things or else his family was going to be in, was going to be physically harmed. Mm. Now the world should know that. That's what they're capable of doing. So if they can do that to a prime minister of a country, they can certainly do it to two ordinary soldiers.
Yeah. Well,
so I wouldn't trust anything that comes out of that video.
There's a worry that comes to my mind, and you have been in, before these courts, and you know many of the individuals, the judges, etc. I wonder about even so let's call it pollution of justice here. You have the ICC, which is a brand new kind of court, and there's a lot of unhappiness with this court, particularly in Africa, where that, after all, the only people charged are Africans so far.
Right.
And but also at The Hague, you have a really older court with a little bit of gravitas called the International Court of Justice. But I'm seeing what could be pollution. That is, you bring them for the ICC under really weird circumstances and allow that to be a backdrop to bringing your case, and Canada's involved now in the case against Myanmar at the International Court of Justice.
Right.
Netherlands is involved, Netherlands and Canada. Apparently NATO gave them the Myanmar file.
Right.
They're going before the ICJ, the International Court of Justice. And meanwhile, next door, you have two prisoners who've yet to be brought in front of a magistrate.
Exactly. And under the ICC rules, if they were held by the ICC, they had to be brought within before the judges immediately upon being brought to the ICC. They cannot be held incommunicado for days or weeks without seeing a judge. Well, and if they're being held incommunicado by the Dutch without being brought to the ICC, just held somewhere by Dutch police, that's a violation of Dutch law, I'm sure, as well. So it's interesting you brought up the International Court of Justice, which is a court which deals with issues between states, not criminal actions so per se. The connection to the Americans goes back to the people that, or the person that brought that case. It was a very small African country called the Gambia. I was surprised when I investigated this to see our old friend, a guy named Aboubakar Tambodou, who used to be a prosecutor at the ICTR, involved in framing up several prisoners, including my client, General Dindili Amana, who was finally acquitted of all the faked up charges he was thrown at him. Aboubakar Tambodou was one of the main lawyers involved in that. He left the ICTR 4 or 5 years ago. He was made the head of the Minister of Justice in the Gambia, which is a very small country and not a big salary for him. And now he's the guy that wrote the document and filed the claim against Myanmar in the International Court of Justice, claiming that Gambia, the small African country in West Africa, has a dispute with Myanmar involving the Rohingya. Well, there is no dispute between Myanmar and the Gambia. There's no dispute between those two countries. So the claim is artificial. And the way the document is, if you read the document, I read the indictment or the complaint, they call it. I don't think he wrote it. It's written in American English, and Mr. Tambadu speaks in a very different style. I've seen his documents. I don't think he wrote this document. I think it was written for him, and I think it was written somewhere in Washington, maybe in Canada, but it wasn't written by him. And if you read it, they recognize that there is no dispute between Gambia and Myanmar, so they try and concoct one. It's quite clear how, if you read the paragraphs, how they try and spin it. So they try to argue there is some sort of dispute. They claim that Gambia is a Muslim country, therefore they represent the interests of Muslims around the world, and they say they have the support of some Muslim international group. But it's totally artificial. So the International Court of Justice has no jurisdiction, as far as I'm concerned, because there is no dispute between Gambia and Myanmar.
Yeah.
But they've allowed it to go forward, and then Aung San Suu Kyi went to testify there to try and cool it, because the preliminary objection by her country was, you don't have jurisdiction over us, because we don't have to recognize it, because we don't have a dispute with Gambia about anything. Yes. Where's the dispute? But she went there to try and get some publicity in favor of Myanmar, and she gave a very good, strong speech that we didn't do anything like you're alleging, and quiet. So now, what happened to Abubakar Tambadu? It's an interesting twist. A few months after he filed that document, he was rewarded by being made appointed as registrar for the residual mechanism of the ICTR in The Hague. He's now sitting in The Hague, or maybe in Arusha. He was in Arusha recently, I know that. But he's now got a $300,000 job as registrar. It seems to me the connection is quite clear. He filed the document, he's got his reward. He's now back at the mechanism, and as registrar of the mechanism, and there and sitting pretty.
Oh, the former ICTR?
Yes. Well, the mechanism controls both the ICTY and ICTR. Oh, yeah. He's now the registrar.
Well, that's
what the ICTR.
That's what worries me about this pollution, that there's some of this. The two courts should actually be a very separate phenomenon.
Yes.
But now we're seeing people changing hats and getting work in both places, but also dragging the odor of cases that have no bearing, but bring with it bring a little weight, as the New York Times, the Globe, CBC says, now we have flesh on the bone of the accusations against Myanmar.
Right.
And then to go back to our two guys, it is an old-fashioned, the only probably legal thing I ever heard, habeas corpus.
Yeah.
And I have to say that, is it Radio Free Asia? I think it's a U.S., media outlet. But at any rate, they say that they're in protective custody. Now, of course, that's another sourced statement. Nobody's seen them. But how... At any rate, couldn't someone just say, I understand you're holding a prisoner here. Has he seen a magistrate? I want to know. Mm-hmm.
Well, right. And the Myanmar government, I suppose, will be the first ones to complain to the Dutch. You have two of our soldiers who've been captured. We want them returned. What are you doing with our soldiers?
The Myanmar has said those are Myanmar soldiers and citizens. They should be returned. And an additional detail to what you raised earlier, we seem to be just eviscerating the sovereignty and the status of Myanmar, because Myanmar actually has an ongoing investigation into allegations of war crimes. Yes. That's part of their case at the ICJ.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. She said that if there are any atrocities committed by units of the Myanmar army, they will be investigated. And they are being investigated because of these complaints. But there was no plan to commit any war crimes or commit genocide as alleged. It was a military operations, justified military operations against rebel movements attacking the government. And where is all the hullabaloo about American soldiers massacring civilians in Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq? Where is the hullabaloo? when they mean soldiers, if American soldiers were captured by some Iraqi rebel group, a Syrian rebel group, and sent to The Hague, what would the United States do? Would the CBC then support these soldiers and say, look what they can? No, they would be outraged. It's the hypocrisy is unbelievable. But we have to go back to what is going on. Why is Myanmar being attacked? And why Aung San Suu Kyi, and I don't think I pronounce her name properly, but I
Suu Kyi, yes.
Still forgive me. Now, she was the darling of the Western liberal set for 20 years, since 1988, when she was flown in from Britain, where she'd lived since she was a child, married to a British fellow. In her late 30s, she was, in 1988, when there was a big anti-government movement in Myanmar, fostered by liberals and reactionaries, against the socialist government of Myanmar. Because you have to remember, Myanmar, since its independence from Britain, has been declared to be a socialist state, where most industries are still nationalized and it has all these socialist aspects. And the military was the guard, saw themselves and portrayed themselves as the guardian of socialism in Myanmar. She was sent in, as you see people sent into Belarus recently, to stir up trouble in 1988, and there was a big movement, and got so bad that the military just finally took over completely. She was then put in jail for her actions trying to overthrow the government there. And after many years, in the last 3 or 4 years, there was elections, and her party won some seats. But because she's married to a foreigner, has foreign children, she can't be president. So she was given a new position called States Council, like Stats Minister in Denmark, Prime Minister, basically.
Yes.
And that's her role. Hmm. Now, you would think that the Western governments would be very happy that she had achieved this position. And in fact, they were. But what has she done? They expected her to open up Myanmar to all the private Western corporations, to privatize all those nationalized companies, to reduce the influence of the socialist-oriented army, to in fact, just dismantle socialism, whatever it is, in Myanmar, and reduce that and open up Myanmar markets to the West and reduce its connection to China, because it has a very strong connection with China, communist China. And that hasn't happened. It turns out that Ms. Suu Kyi has become rather conciliatory towards her former enemies. Once she's in the government, she's found out that perhaps maybe her position was not always so right, that maybe they weren't always so wrong, and she's actually worked with them. And she has not forced privatization of the economy. She has not. She's increased ties with China and has angered the United States and its allies, its puppets like Canada. And that seems to be the real reason why they're now attacking her, mm-hmm. who won the Nobel Prize. She won the Nobel Peace Prize, I forget.
Yes, she won the Nobel
Prize. Oh, yes. So this woman who was the human rights darling of the entire Western world, I mean, I remember... You remember 20 years we were faced with her and portrayed, she was like, you know, like Valesa. And now she's suddenly a devil. I mean, the way they can flip propaganda and turn people's minds against their darling is really amazing.
The Canadian Parliament withdrew their honorary citizenship for her.
Oh my God.
Unanimous NDP, Green, Liberal, Conservative.
Yeah.
But meanwhile,
I got an article from Global Times. I think the Chinese said it best here, if I can read something to you. They say, after Suu Kyi came to power, Myanmar didn't totally tilt toward the West as the latter had expected. She has chosen to be a pragmatic leader, defending Myanmar's national interests and continue to develop steady and healthy relations with China. As a result, Suu Kyi, the once highly hailed democratic icon, has now been labeled as a spokesman for mass atrocity by the West. Some international relations scholars have pointed out that the Rohingya issue has been overly politicized and embroiled in major power competition. Hmm. And the West is not as unbiased and just as they have claimed concerning human rights issues. Yeah. So I think that says it very well, what's going on here.
Yes, it does. And by the way, a detail that the CBC and our ambassador and the Globe and others have not been sharing is that there's an election going on in Myanmar right now.
Right.
many parties are running, and Sue Key is actually not a shoo-in. She's in a serious contest.
Yes.
And so yes. In other words, they have democracy, but we're going to try to deprive them of their sovereignty anyway.
Exactly. So we see that the entire allegations against the Rohingya, we're not there. I don't know what's really going on there, but we have to be suspect that they're not quite what they claim to be. That her defense of Myanmar may be more correct than we have led to believe. And the antics that the actions they're taking now with these two soldiers show again the criminality of the West and their hypocrisy by claiming they're defenders of human rights when they're denying human rights to these soldiers who've been captured in battle. Mm-hmm. And then putting out propaganda against a democratic government when she's been elected. And as you say, there's further elections going on.
Yeah. Well, now we have this great banner of human rights, the talk of it in international law, but we have an ambassador who has not seen a video, but is telling us that they have confessed, and this is testimony, and they have not been brought in front of a magistrate. So truly the Canadian government is conniving with hostage taking or a kidnapping. That's kidnapping.
Right.
Isn't it the job of people who respect human rights to say, bring him into court?
Exactly, he should be brought.
I mean, we're hearing, we don't have to. We hide them in Holland, despite the fact that their government asked for their return. We hide them, and then we talk about what they said. I mean, I thought that was the perfect definition of how a dictatorship works, or yeah, monarchy, of course. The Netherlands is a monarchy, so maybe that's why this is happening.
Yeah, and we saw that with Milosevic. I mean, when he was in the Serbia, still president of Serbia, when he was arrested by NATO forces, the West tried to go through the formal extradition procedure, and the Serbian Constitutional Court said it's illegal to extradite him and banned it. The same day that they handed out the decision, as they were issuing it, he was put in chains and put it on a RAF plane and sent to Holland, to the Netherlands, illegally. They just kidnapped him. Mm-hmm. And then he ended up dead. Yeah. They did the same with General Dindilya Manor, when not only John Campbell, when Dindilya Manor was taken to Arusha, the IC, the Rwanda tribunal, he was told he was not being arrested. He was just going down to answer some questions. And he was thrown in jail without a lawyer, held there for a while. And then when I finally became his lawyer, I think after the first couple of months I went down, I went to see him in the prison. He'd been removed from the prison and they would not tell me where he was. It took some days of some anger and some press coverage to finally get them to admit that they had taken him out of the prison and put him in a safe house where he was being held secretly.
And by the way, and Chris, I'm so glad you raised the general, because after he was acquitted, that was your great work, and people should study his case, actually. But didn't they also start off with him? He's going to be a friendly guy, and right. They hadn't arrested him. And so they portrayed him in a certain way.
Yes, he was put under a lot of pressure, and other prisoners were as well, to turn against their former government and become witnesses. And when they refused to do so, then they concocted charges. And he was held in prison for 4 years while they spent 4 years trying to concoct some charges. And that's what they did.
This innocent man, how many years was he in prison?
14 years.
14?
14 years from 2000 to he was released finally. Well, he was acquitted in 2014, but not allowed home till 2017, so it was almost 17 years he was held.
While he was in prison, his son was dying of cancer, and he asked on humanitarian grounds to be allowed to attend his funeral or to
right.
see him.
Yeah, and they wouldn't allow that. I mean, he wasn't even allowed bail. I mean, Laurent Gbagbo, who's being acquitted several times by the ICC, they're still trying to hold him there. Mm-hmm. And there was no evidence against him of anything. The French wanted him arrested and taken out of Ivory Coast politics. So he was shanghaied and sent to the ICC on faked up charges. through an agreement with Ocampo, who was then the prosecutor. It was quite clear. The emails came out that it was all arranged. So the ICC has become a political tool. Yeah. And it's staffed. I mean, the ICC, we have to remember, is, although funded by the EU mainly, not the Americans, because they're not party to the Rome Statute any longer and deny jurisdiction over themselves, they have managed to place key personnel who are under their influence in key positions in the ICC and control it. Ben Suter, the current prosecutor, was also a prosecutor at the ICTR and involved in framing up prisoners there. Yeah. And she was rewarded with a very highly paid job as prosecutor. And the president of the ICC, the chief judge there, Chile Ibo Azuji, was one of those, I was told by a CIA official, who was behind the frame-up of Dindilian Mana. And but his reward is to become, make all that big money as a, and as a chief judge there. And that's what's going on. So we have a system where international law, international justice has become no better than Nazi courts in Nazi Germany. They've become politicized. They've become almost fascistic courts because they're not used to bring justice to the world, but to oppress people, to oppress countries.
I wanted to ask about that. I mean, and by the way, in the minutes remaining here, it seems to me that we're going through experiencing a regression, a backward movement in people's understanding of due process, et cetera. And the label on the package is human rights. Mm-hmm. But so many people who have that label, like Fortify Rights, Human Rights Watch, even Amnesty too, are very enthusiastic about prosecuting people, not defending people who are accused, which in my idea, what defense, you know, due process, there's supposed to be an assumption, presumption of innocence. I don't see any presumption of innocence. Instead, we're getting all these people with very unctuous language about believing in human rights. And all they want to do is kidnap people, put them in witness protection programs, intimidate or bribe them to testify against others, which, I mean, that's as bad as any Chicago gangster movie.
Yeah, it's no different. We've seen that now for the last 20 years with the establishment of these ad hoc tribunals, now the ICC, and we hope the ICC would be better, but it is not because of the way it's staffed and controlled. So we now, I mean, the ICC makes noises about charging, investigating Israel or United States about Afghanistan and so on. But it's just window dressing to try and build up its credibility after many African countries have withdrawn or threatened to withdraw from it because of its policies. Mm-hmm. But the ICC will never investigate those two countries, and they don't have jurisdiction to do so. So it's just all window dressing. It's a game. But we're facing, and the same with the MH17 inquiry in the Netherlands. You're having, these are political show trials par excellence, same as all the trials of the ICTY and ICTR were, and continue to be, because now we have Mr. Kajuga has been arrested. Mm-hmm. And maybe, I think he's being sent to Arusha, I'm not sure. What they do now with the United States when it erases a country or tries to, or defeats a country or conquers a country, not only no longer treats with its leadership as with respect and negotiates a treaty or a peace treaty to resolve the war, it treats them like common criminals. It arrests the entire military and administrative personnel of that country and hauls them before a kangaroo court and condemns them. And that has several purposes: the propaganda to support their aggression, to cover up what they really did in all these events. And it also, it's a warning to other nations. This is what's going to happen to you. If you resist us, this is where you're going to end up. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gaddafi, they didn't even bother, they just murdered him. Saddam Hussein had a show trial and they hanged him. They put up a strong defense. I mean, I know the officers involved, the American officers involved in that. They just, everything was a show trial. It was concocted charges and then they hanged him. They murdered him. Mm-hmm. This is what's going on. There's no different what the Nazis did. Mm-hmm. No different whatsoever. And that's what we're faced with. We're faced with now in the last 20 years, you're right, a regression back to basically fascism. I mean, we don't, they don't dress in the same uniforms and make the same The actions and the policies are exactly the same.
Yeah, and also there's a shaming. You were once described by the Globe and Mail as, what was it, a lawyer for the damned, or the devil's lawyer. Yeah. But they get very close also, as in reactionary or fascist states, the idea that if you defend somebody, you're a criminal.
Yeah, that's right.
Canadian history, people who defended labor unions, communists, they got, the lawyers ended up being in a jackpot themselves.
Yeah.
Because it's a bad thing to be defending, right?
Yeah, that's sadly true. There's defense is ignored. I mean, the idea that these so-called mass murderers or war criminals should have a defense is anathema to them. And as we see with, say, General Mladic or others, they arrange defense. They try and send in many cases, lawyers who try and persuade these people to plead guilty. Or they defend them in a sort of technical way, but not there's no real defense made. So these courts are arranged in all sorts of ways to make sure these people are convicted.
Yeah, the ugliest aspect of our legal system is plea bargaining, right? 80% of cases, maybe higher, are plea bargain.
Yeah, and we know the ICTR, the ICTY is almost the people that I was. And a Russian lawyer were asked to defend General Mladic in his trial. But when we were in Belgrade the day before we left, we were told by the family that we were no longer considered because they'd been threatened by the Serbian secret police and NATO that if they hired us, they would be in trouble. So they had foisted on him two other lawyers who did not really run a defense as far as I can see. And so he's been convicted, but they didn't run the defense. If you read the judgment, you can't detect any defense in that trial. Yeah. So that's how they try and arrange these things in all sorts of ways. But the fact is that they are kangaroo courts. They're not real courts. And Louise Arbour made the famous statement that
an
improvement of justice is to make the rules of justice more flexible. So we can allow in third party hearsay, fourth party hearsay, and use that evidence because we don't need to have real evidence. This is Louise Arbour's advance, the Canadian advance of justice, is not to require any evidence against people. This is where we've gotten to. It's Alice in Wonderland on speed.
Yeah. Well, we've been speaking with Christopher Black, and Christopher, I want to say, I mean, it's very helpful. I know you'll be concerned about the upshot of this matter, and we would to talk to you again as it progresses. I hope we can at least get them in front of a judge to properly identify themselves.
I'm glad you raised it because it's it may seem like some people just two soldiers, but so what? But it's very important because if this can happen to them, it can happen to anybody. And look at Meng Wanzhou. She can be arrested on faked up charges, you can be arrested. I can be arrested. Anybody can be arrested. There's no sense of security any longer.
Once it's arrested, we'll be arrested.
You'll be arrested. So yeah, I'm glad you raised it, and we have to keep following this story and find out what goes on, what happens with it.
Yeah. So, Christopher Black, international criminal lawyer, defender of General Dindili Mana, successfully. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.